Good morning. I'd like to begin with a little illustration kind of story. For the past few years, much of my personal development coaching practice has centered on trauma healing and spiritual counseling, as well as counseling couples in improving their communication skills. Not that long ago, I met with a husband and wife for the first time. I had been working one-on-one with the husband for quite a while on issues related to severe trauma, and he wanted me to meet his wife. What arose in the session, I think, is a metaphor for something larger going on in our society right now. It was obvious to me that this husband and wife loved each other very much and were there because they were committed to their marriage. Given all that, it wasn't surprising when at one point in our session, the wife said with a great deal of force and heat, "We have this great life, more money than we need, good jobs, great kids, everyone is healthy. So he just needs to stop all of this crap and get over how he feels." Whew, this is kind of typical of my work. What she was saying, in other words, if you really look below the surface, is this. His emotions make me uncomfortable. His struggling makes me uncomfortable, and I don't have the patience for his struggling, his learning. So he needs to just fix himself by knocking it off, and then I'll be comfortable, and everything will be okay. We often think this way, right? We personalize everything. If everyone and everything would just meet with my personal preferences and expectations, align, for instance, with my political, social, and religious perspective, align with my way of expressing thoughts and emotions and behaviors, well, then everything would be right with the world, and I could live in perpetual ease and comfort. How lovely. But that's not really how it works. Since the first session with this couple, I mentioned we've been working on tools and techniques that foster allowing for, which has helped their communications be more productive. So when I say allowing for, what am I talking about? In the context of today's talk, allowing for is giving emotional, mental, and spiritual space for people, things, and events to be just as they are without trying to fix, change, or judge anything. Allowing for is flexible, an attitude of learning that recognizes that we are all teachers and we are all students of life and each other. Allowing for says that unpleasantness and uncertainty are okay because they're just a given in life. Ultimately, allowing for is the spiritual practice, the art, if you will, of finding alignment in the present moment with what is exactly as it is, and therefore living in joy and with a sense of belonging no matter what is happening around you. Patience, trust, and faith are the key ingredients of allowing. In the scenario I shared with you regarding my counseling couple, the issue wasn't so much that the husband had trauma, but rather, as a couple, they hadn't cultivated skills for the constructive allowing for of conflict and each other's differences. When we don't know how to allow, we tend to personalize events, other people's behaviors, and other people's emotions and attitudes as something being done to or against us, rather than seeing them for what they truly are, an expression of what that person knows themselves to be at this moment in time, and an expression of the person's understanding of their world and themselves in it based on their unique self, belief system, and life experiences. This couple is very typical, I think, of our societal way of handling conflict, both inner and outer conflict. Hey, this makes me uncomfortable, so knock it off. Don't want to deal with it, right? We tend to think of conflict as always bad and always destructive, and therefore something to avoid rather than seeing it for what it truly is: normal and informative, and when handled skillfully, constructive. For example, if we choose, we can reframe inner and outer conflict as highlighting for us where we might need to grow and learn, such as, gosh, this inner conflict, this inner discomfort is telling me that I might need to learn tools for not judging myself so harshly. We might also view conflict as an opportunity to engage in healing practices such as unconditional love, acceptance, and forgiveness. Or view perhaps conflict as an opportunity to improve our communication skills. Conflict can also be viewed as a benefit because it can teach us flexibility, which is the key defining aspect of resiliency. Resilience is as defined as the capacity to prepare for, recover from, and adapt in the face of stress, challenge, and adversity. If we look closely, we can also see that conflict challenges our old assumptions and leads to necessary changes in outdated practices and processes. A woman's right to vote, the civil rights movement, our rising awareness of the importance of sustainability, and more all came out of inner and outer conflict that led to beneficial inner and outer transformation. In other words, conflict raises our awareness of what is important to us and to others, and can lead us, if we so choose, to use our creativity to find new or best outcomes through collaboration and cooperation. Ultimately, inner and outer conflict can, again, if we are open to it, lead us to identify and look at higher truth by helping us to see that our and acknowledge that our individual personal truth is not the only truth. For the past few years, I've been presenting a lot of workshops on something I call personality styles as an expression of spirit. I began presenting the workshop in response to people asking me, how can I get along better with friends, family, strangers, neighbors in a culture that currently cultivates destructive conflict by fostering the idea that political belief and religious belief are our one true identity? A key component of the workshop is defining personal or individual truth, as well as something called collective truth, and finally, higher or more absolute truth, and developing, allowing for strategies so that a greater sense of connection to one's best self, others, and the world can be found and felt. To give definition to what I'm talking about, individual or personal truth can be defined as our understanding of what is true based on our personal perceptions, belief system, and life experiences. Personal truth is based on our personal description of what the world is and how and why it functions the way it does, including who we are and the meaning of life. Personal truth is driven by story, the stories we construct to explain how and why life happens as it happens, as well as the stories we construct to explain how and why we react to the way life happens. For example, I might say to you as my personal truth, gosh, everyone loves Thanksgiving. It's such a happy family time. And your personal truth answer might be, oh, yeah? Ugh, I always feel blue around the holidays, and having to hang out with my family, nothing but stress. Personal truth, right? We also have collective or socially accepted truths based on the learning of other people's experiences and truth through social interaction and communication. Collective truth is very tribal, benefiting the specific collective worldview of a particular group, be it a family, community, country, religion, or social group. Collective truth is big on confirmation bias, the willingness to only listen to that which is already in alignment with what is believed by the group. The most apparent example of collective truth right now is the separating out of people into two political camps, red and blue, and then defining people solely by that separation. Through this collective separating out, we have given ourselves permission to not allow for the intelligence, the humanness, and the good intentions of those we view as other than ourselves, causing us to lose sight of the benefit they bring to the greater whole. A danger of believing your collective truth and individual truth as higher truth or the only truth, and that's what is happening here, is that it opens the door to first otherifying your fellow human beings, then marginalizing them, and finally dehumanizing them. This is the slippery slope that ignites all social and political injustice. Higher truth can be defined as truth that is beyond individual or collective experience. It is truth associated with the fundamental basis of existence, be if you call it divinity, spirit, nature, whatever you call it, something that exists beyond and independent of us, something that exists long after we pass from this world. In the end, the spiritual practice of allowing for is about opening the door to living higher truth. When we learn to look for higher truth in our individual experiences of the people and events in our lives, we find a path towards sustainable inner and outer peace, where inner and outer conflict resolution ultimately lives, and where a deeper sense of connection to our best selves, others, and the world around us thrives. Being able to allow for higher truth helps us to allow for the knowing that we are connected to all that is. We are not separate from others and the world around us. We are not separate from people and events that cause discomfort to arise in us. We are not separate from those who harm us and those we harm. We are not separate from those we agree with or those we disagree with. Those we like and those we don't like. Those who sit beside us here in church or those who sit beside us on an airplane. Higher truths are based in expressions of oneness, unconditional love, and acceptance that gives us a view of higher understanding. Some examples of higher truth might be, there is only one human family. We are all brothers and sisters. All people have inherent worth. Other higher truths might include, if we look closely, hurt people hurt other people. Everyone is doing the best that they can. Pollution is harmful to all living things. And the earth is our home, and we are responsible for her health and well-being. In order to access and embody higher truth, we must first own and honor our individual truth, tell our story, name our hurt to ourselves and, if and when possible, to a loving or caring other. Often when we are denied this, our pain grows and manifests into something darker, manifests in shadow and becomes a shadow across our lives. Telling the story of our individual truth ultimately frees us, opens us up to higher truth by allowing for our grief and sense of loss around something to be healed. It is hard to allow for the seeking and finding of higher truth when we have unresolved pain around our individual stories. That said, in the end, we must remember that our individual story is only a resting place, not a permanent residence for our understanding. There are many ways to practice allowing for, such as listen for the essence of the story inside the story that someone is sharing with you, as I did with my client's wife. Go into communications with the people you know and meet with an attitude of, in this interaction, I will learn something here. Periodically ask of your closely held beliefs, is this true? How do I know it's true? And what would I be without this thought? Befriend people. Choose to hang out with people whose belief systems, emotional expressions, and behaviors challenge your own so as to loosen your attachment to the idea that this is the only way to do things. Practice loving kindness, tonglen, and self-compassion. Bless both your friends and your enemies. Saying all or part of the Buddhist mantra for compassion silently to myself is one of my favorite allowing for strategies. I use it in situations where I am confronted with people who have attitudes that seem out of sync with my understanding of oneness and the cultivation of oneness and love. The mantra centers me in calm, allowing me to act from my best self rather than respond in a reactive sort of way. I'd like to share that mantra with you now in closing. And as we go through it, I would ask you to silently repeat the words I say and then see, consider if you can direct the words and their intention towards someone that perhaps gets under your skin, rubs you the wrong way, takes you down the rabbit hole of stress, and away from the best expression of yourself. The mantra goes like this. Just like me, this person is seeking happiness in his or her life. Just like me, this person is trying to avoid suffering in his or her life. Just like me, this person has known sadness, loneliness, and despair. Just like me, this person is seeking to fill his or her needs. And just like me, this person is learning about life. Although it's not part of the Buddhist compassion mantra, my own personal compassion mantra has become, just like me, this person is doing the best that they can. In closing now, we will take a minute to meditate on allowing for in the mantra of compassion. And I thank you for listening today. May we all be free of suffering that arises from not allowing.